This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the World Wide Wave. This is the World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9, live from Melbourne, Australia. I'm Tom, joined in the studio by both Squirrel and Matt tonight. Hey, gang, how are you?
It's nice to have the old gang back.
It is good to have the whole team back. Hello, Squirrel.
Hello.
Tonight, guess where? Singapore. Stopping over in Singapore, we speak with Roy, health service worker in Singapore, about the difficulties in providing the Singapore LGBT community with health services. We hear from Jean Chong, co-founder of the lesbian activist group
Sayoni.
And we also speak with an author named Young Fa. He'll be speaking about his ebook, correct?
Yes, and we've got some questions for you. If you're 34-year-old and you're a lesbian, can you qualify for public housing in Singapore? 90% of the population does, but do you? If you hold a poetry event, would you expect the police to put it under surveillance if you were in Singapore? Lastly, what percentage of Singaporeans approve of same-sex marriage? You can find out all this and more on tonight's program. If you know the answers, feel free to SMS us at 0427-JOY949 or send us an email at onair@joy.org.au.
And we are live on Facebook as well, so jump on Facebook to World Wide Wave or W3, the number 3, Joy, and we'd love to chat and hear from you.
But first, as always, we like to get things going with some music. Here we have Nat Ho, Singapore actor and singer, who was originally one of the top 30 contestants in the first Singapore Idol. I don't really think he won, though, but that's probably okay. Joy 94.9, a World Wide Wave. That was Nat Ho with his new release, Unleashed. This week we are in Singapore and it is time for Fun Fast Facts. Officially, the Republic of Singapore is an island country made up of 63 islands. Now, we always start out with the same question, something about can same-sex people have sex, blah, blah, blah. But tonight, let's shake it up a bit. Let's ask a more specific sexual legal question. All right, Squirrel and Matt, Singapore. Regardless of who you are or who you're doing it with, is oral sex legal in Singapore?
I think when we interviewed one of our guests, they mentioned that it had just become legal about 5 years ago. That's my guess. Matt, what's your guess?
Oh, I think they're a bit biased. I think they've mixed it up a bit, as you hinted there.
Correct, correct. Answer in a moment. What about anal sex?
I really don't want to think about it. How about you, Matt?
I'm quite okay thinking about it, but I'm in Singapore. There's a bit of illegality going on there.
Correct. It's a bit of a mishmash. In 2007, the Singapore government got together and decided that oral and anal sex would be legalized for heterosexuals and female homosexuals.
So anal sex is legal if you're straight?
But or a lesbian.
Or a lesbian.
Oh, yeah.
Which is interesting. And
there you go. Go figure.
Illegal if you're gay.
Correct. They specifically left homosexual males illegal to have sex. The former PM at the time told in a statement, quote unquote, Singapore is basically a conservative society. The family is the basic building block of this society. And by family in Singapore, we mean one man, one woman, marrying, having children, and bringing up children within that framework of a stable family unit.
And
quote.
Exactly how does anal sex in a heterosexual relationship
contribute
to the family?
That is an excellent question. I wish that one of us would have been present there.
It would have been interesting hearing the debate in Parliament, wouldn't it?
Not off to a good start in Singapore so far. Just as a side note, punishable with imprisonment of up to 2 years if you get caught.
What else do you know, Tom?
Interesting. They go a little bit further. Entrapment is legal in Singapore, and I found this to be a very interesting little statement. If the victim of an entrapment operation uses a symbolic gesture to signal intention to have sexual activity with the police decoy, they can be subject to 3 months jail. My question basically was, what was the symbolic gesture? So basically, you're trying to hire someone or trying to engage.
Yeah, I was like, for the uninitiated, let's explain entrapment.
Doesn't necessarily mean that you're trying to hire someone. You're just, because homosexual sex is illegal in Singapore, you're just trying to engage in meeting someone, getting together. If that person is an undercover police officer and you use quote unquote a symbolic gesture to signal intention to have sexual relationships, you can be imprisoned for up to 3 months.
And what's more, they task police to go out and try to entrap, try to almost encourage.
Can you imagine
guys?
A training course for that?
That would be interesting. A little tidbit on the armed forces. Widely an infamous classification known as Category 302 is a medical code given to personnel who are homosexual, transvestites, or pedophiles. Category 302 categorizes homosexuals by classifying them into those with effeminate behavior and those without effeminate behavior. You'd think that's a pretty good classification. There's this side and there's that side. But wait, the Singapore government goes further. There's a further subcategorization of that called 30B. And in the 30B subcategory, they further subdivide what they've already divided, and they subdivide it further into mildly effeminate, effeminate, and severely effeminate. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't even categorize gay men this much. I think the Singapore military is spending way too much time thinking about gay guys.
Now, is there a difference, Tom, between who can serve? Like, can a mildly effeminate man serve but not a severely effeminate man?
Well, Singapore is conscript, which means you have to serve your time in the military. They're not going to get rid of any help that they can get. So you can serve in the military. However, there are great restrictions. Basically, you go to boot camp, they send you out, they give you tasks with no security clearance, and basically you're off by yourself away from the rest of the people.
In fact, if you are declared or notified under Category 302, you don't stay overnight in the camp.
Correct. Isn't that interesting? They send you out after you do your work so that you don't spend the night with the boys.
I think the other thing that really quite surprised me about this was that people who were classified as effeminate had to be managed. And managing was everything from appearing before a psychological medicine branch of the headquarters of the medical services through to full psychiatric assessments.
I'm curious to know if they have different management for the mildly effeminate and the severely effeminate. Not such a fun fast fact. It was actually a bit disheartening, but just throwing this out there, when do you think, what year was it that the first Singapore citizen publicly declared his HIV status?
2002?
I'd go late 90s.
Late 90s, yes. Not as shocking as the 2000s, but 1998. That's not that long ago, considering that this has been out there for quite some time. It's a little scary that that has just come out in 1998. We are going to hear more about the health services in Singapore a little bit later in the hour when we speak with Roy.
And it really is symptomatic with a lot of the laws that we've discovered within Singapore, where they are lagging quite significantly behind, given that it is such an international country and a transit point, an entry point to Asia for a whole lot of Western countries. And we see that there's that seems to be taking a while to filter through.
Nikki from Canada, where everybody can get married. You're listening to the World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9, World Wide Wave, and that was Charliza Jalita with No Go Pogo. Her website says that she bursts with brightly colored confetti with eccentric electric pop music. And it goes on and on, but basically I just thought she was fun.
It actually sounds like that. It comes through in her music, doesn't it? It's very boppy and bouncy. We are in Singapore tonight on the World Wide Wave. Now, a few technical issues with our SMS and email. So to contact us tonight, two options. Robert is awaiting on the phone, 1300-JOY-949, or we are live on Facebook. And hello to our new friends, Yangfa Haviz, Richard and Jean, who've all joined us tonight. Send us a message. It's World Wide Wave or W, the number 3, Joy on Facebook. Our first interview tonight is with Jean Chong in Singapore. She's the co-founder of the lesbian activist group Sayoni. We started by asking Jean to tell us a bit more about her group and the struggles about being lesbian and the struggles for equality of the gay rights movement in Singapore.
Well, I mean, it's a LGBT group, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender group. I mean, it's basically an advocacy group, but we have a social element to it. So that's basically what we do. We lobby politicians. We are involved in CEDAW, which is the Committee on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women. It's a UN convention. So we write reports every 4 years. We try to make things better.
How are things now?
Well, I think that the gay community in Singapore, we are pretty stuck because, I mean, there's not much progress in terms of policies and laws. I mean, the government is, they prefer to sit on the fence and they prefer to keep laws that are discriminatory in the books. So what I recently met with the Minister of Law. And I told him that I said, look, if you don't want gay people or you cannot be bothered with us, just tell us. So we'll give up the fight and move on and go somewhere else.
What did he say?
Well, he said that, well, that's not true. But I told him that, look, I mean, nothing's changed. Our policies are discriminatory. Gay people have no visitation rights. We have problems with housing.
Tell us a bit more about that public housing. It's that if you're a single man or woman in Singapore, you don't qualify for public housing. And how does And so does that then apply to gay and lesbians as well?
If you're single, you can only buy a public housing at 35 years old, which is only from the open market, which is really expensive. It can be $500,000. Which is maybe Australian $400,000 or $300,000 for a really small house. 90%, more than 90% of the population in Singapore stays in public housing. So, I mean, and then it affects us because young kids who come out, they can't leave the house. Rental is really expensive. So it affects our coming out curve and we have a big problem with that.
Where you've got so many people living in the house with their parents, if you are a gay or lesbian person, what is family life like?
Well, I mean, a lot of us live double lives. So we are straight when we're home. And then when we leave the home, then we have our little pockets of gay life. I mean, it's stressful for all of us. And I mean, we all know that coming out helps with changing social perception. But I mean, this affects us because that safe space, they can't find it at home. And the issue of violence, which is often not documented, happens at home. So, I mean, we try to address it, but we have very often we have no statistics, we have no help from social services.
You mentioned also that you had experienced surveillance or that other gays and lesbians had experienced government surveillance. Can you tell us a bit more about what that was?
We organize Pride Month in August every year. So it's a whole month of activities. And there's always police who will come. They'll be writing down how many people are in the audience. They'll be watching what we are talking about or showing. And there'll be police surveillance outside the event itself. I mean, we can identify them because after a while, you can tell that they are not part of the community.
Is that just a scare tactic, or is there a consequence if you are discovered?
I think it's a combination. They try to censor us. If we're putting out a poetry reading event, we have to submit everything that is we read, and they come to see if we break the law on that. And if we do things a little bit sensitive, like maybe gay people, Muslim gay people, they'll be there watching. But we got so used to them, so...
They censored your poetry readings. Am I hearing that correctly?
That's right.
Wow.
Anything that's gay.
Is that still happening now?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, they are a lot more comfortable with what we're doing, but they use another kind of way to control us through a bureaucratic process. Like, you need to apply for licenses, you need to show them everything that you are going to talk about. I mean, in the past, they even banned activities like a picnic in the park, a run, simple things like that.
There are all these quite significant government controls on the way you live. Is there public support behind those, or is it being driven by a conservative government?
I think that over the last 10 years, Singapore is getting a lot more liberal because there's so many people from everywhere in the world, so it helps us. But the conservatives, like the religious rights, they complain to the authorities. They'll say things like, oh, you know, they're trying to change our young people. They're pedophiles, they're perverts. And the censorship law in Singapore guidelines, where the media is disallowed from portraying a gay person as neutral or positively. So you need to be a pervert. You need to die in the movie or film. So that's how they create this huge, terrible image of us. Yeah.
Are there any positive portrayals of gay people in life in general in Singapore?
Not in the media, because our media is government, all government controlled. Well, but the internet helps, because lots of young people are on the internet, and it tends to be a lot more liberal. So, the younger generation is a lot more open-minded.
Jean, you mentioned before that you felt that Singapore society and the laws were stuck. What do you think it will take to unstick that and to progress gay rights in Singapore?
I think the government needs to take up that moral courage. So until we can get people to change their minds on the ground a lot more than 50%, then perhaps we'll have a better chance then.
Jean, thank you for joining us here on Joy 94.9.
And that was Jean Chung, co-founder of the lesbian activist group Sayoni from Singapore. And thank you, Jean, for speaking with us. And with a litany of things she just listed, they don't qualify for public housing, there's police surveillance, poetry, they ban picnics in the park, control through bureaucratic processes. And the one that got to me the most, I guess emotionally, is that there's no positive portrayals of LGBTs in the media. Instead, they're the one that has to die in the movie or film. And that's actually government control regulation. So, I don't know. What are you thinking, Tom?
I'm actually amazed about the housing, that you have to be in a relationship to move out of your house. That's more than a bit old world, so it doesn't matter.
Straight relationship at that.
Correct.
And fairly rich, too. I mean, for
well, if you want to be single,
house.
You have to be rich.
Mm.
Insane.
I think a lot of surprises there for me in terms of, as we sort of mentioned before, there is a lot of international influence, a lot of Westerners who come through and visit Singapore, but there's this lag in change, I guess, from a government point of view.
And yet, as we hear later in the show, it was probably the Western influence that got us in the first place.
Always with the Western influence. Back to some music. Here we have Tila Tequila. This is for the ladies, Singapore-born American model and television personality. She is best known for her appearance in the men's magazine Maxim and Penthouse. Here we have Paralyze.
Follow LGBT International News and Current Affairs.
Like us on Facebook at W3Joy or visit us at W3Joy.org.
This is Eve from Cameroon on Joy 94.9.
It's the World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9. It's a show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. And tonight we are in Singapore. And a big hello to all of our international listeners who are listening live streaming on from joy.org.au.
We asked Roy if Article 377A of Singapore Penal Code interfered with providing the LGBT community with health services. And this is what he said.
There is an organization in Singapore called Uga Chaga, which does provide support for people living up, people who are gay and LGBTQ. In terms of how it actually affects, I mean, there are research and studies which shows that 377A by itself might not be, have an effect, because one thing is, in Singapore, people are not really aware of the law or of the, actually of their constitutional rights or actually of society. So I think what is more a major effect would actually be social cues and social norms, where they feel that it is not right to be gay in a sense. I mean, one thing I'll add is, if you look at a previous survey, a recent survey that was done by NTU, the National Technological University of Singapore, in 2010, it talks about how 40% of Singaporeans are accepting towards gay people, and then 45% of them are not. I would think that this percentage will change gradually, because my personal sense is, by and large, Singaporeans are largely okay, or they do not actually have a strong opinion towards gay people. So, yeah, so that's what I think. But, so what I think is 377A, it doesn't have a strong effect in the sense that people don't actually know that there's a law in place. I mean, a lot of young gay people might not be aware. But it does have an effect when the leaders, our political leaders speak up on it, or our church leaders speak up on it. And then that's how they influence people to think that it might be wrong, because mentally people have the concept that perhaps it's not something acceptable, just because when it's our political leaders and religious leaders speaking to their flock, that it becomes a matter. Yeah.
So what you're saying is that the social influence is greater than the legal influence.
I feel so, because, I mean, the other thing about Singapore is our leaders have a habit of saying that we are a conservative society. I mean, I think it's quite similar to how America does it, where you want to say that you are a conservative society so that it's easier for you to buy votes. When people are conservative, they are less likely to be more think through more about their opinions or views, and they're more likely to vote for the incumbent, which is PAP. So in that sense, you want people to be conservative, and thus people, for the people who buy into the idea that they need to be conservative, they actually buy into the whole package where perhaps they need to also be against certain rights in that sense. I mean, one thing is human rights is not something the government believes in anyway.
Do you feel like, on a positive note, that you mentioned before that the youth seem to be more accepting. Overall, do you feel like the younger generations are becoming more accepting of same-sex relationships?
Well, yes, I think so. If you look at the young people, they actually, because if you speak to some of the gay groups, they say that for the young people, they do not actually care about whether they are gay, straight, etc. They make friends because they simply make friends because they want to make friends with people who they like. So they do not actually want to categorize themselves into a certain group. And I think if you look around as well, there are a lot more young people who are very comfortable in expressing themselves in Singapore as a gay person. There are a lot more lesbians holding hands nowadays in the streets, and gay people do not actually feel that they have conformed to a certain way of behaving or dressing as well.
That was Roy, working in the health services in Singapore. You're on the World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9. We're the show that takes you around the globe, one country at a time, each week, stopping off and looking at the news and current affairs in that country. This week we're stopping off at Singapore, and we've just heard Roy talk about how people, particularly youth, don't actually know about the law in place, but there's still a political need to be conservative. Interesting stuff, eh, Matt?
It is, and that was also highlighted by Jean, that people really don't understand the law, or they don't care about it, but this social pressure, the social norm of what is acceptable and what is not, seems to be the thing that actually dictates the way society lives in Singapore.
It's interesting because Singapore, when you think of Singapore anywhere, you think of it as a very law-strict society. So for people to be nonchalant and not necessarily know that something is illegal, I find interesting. And then on the other side, there's this social norm. It seems as though the social norm is slowly changing, perhaps.
Slowly, but he did say that, you know, when the leaders speak, the political leaders and the church leaders, so there's still, the pressure from religious leaders within the country, even though Singapore has a large Buddhist community and Buddhism is usually more accepting of homosexuality than, as compared to other, certainly Christian religions.
There's a Singaporean Buddhist gay group as well, and they're quite active.
Hmm.
Wow.
this idea of generational change?
Consistent theme worldwide, I'd say. Once again, we're riding a wave where the youth are going to be carrying the crest of older people's homophobic beliefs and just pushing them right over, crashing it on the beach.
Do you think, as much as they're crashing on the beach, is it a really long, long beach? Given that it is the older generation that has the political power that is making the decisions, and the younger ones that may in fact want change?
We may be riding this wave for a while, 'tis true.
And it is possible that the wave could crash. Example of the hippies in America in the 60s became the conservative 80s leaders of the free world.
But enough about Ronald Reagan.
Why? Let's talk more about Ronnie. No, let's not. Let's hear some more music. Singaporean electro-pop artist Eli T, if I said that correctly, with Dancing with Fire. Joy 94.9, World Wide Wave. That was Eli T with Dancing with Fire.
And tonight we are in Singapore, and a cavalcade of guests tonight. We're now speaking with Yang Fa. Yang Fa is the author of an e-book called I Will Survive, Personal Gay, Lesbian and Bisexual and Transgender Stories in Singapore. And we asked him to tell us about his book.
Tell us a bit about the book that you wrote about gay life in Singapore.
Hi, my name is Yang Fa. I'm from Singapore. I put together this e-book called I Will Survive, Personal Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual and Transgender Stories in Singapore. So basically brings together 21 stories from 21 different people of what it's like to be LGBT in Singapore. So dealing with coming out, different issues, relationships, mental illness, things that we suffer or different people go through. Being lesbian, gay, or bisexual, transgender in Singapore. And it's intentionally titled I Will Survive because it's stories of how people have thrived and coped and come through the different adversities they have just encountered in their personal lives. So very personal stories.
How much of being a gay or lesbian person in Singapore is about survival?
I suppose it does depend. I mean, to be fair, of the 21 very different people I've met, suppose the underlying thread or theme that I've come across is how being LGBT isn't the only thing in their lives. I mean, for example, I distinctly recall meeting this gay man who, for him, I mean, his story is called a double closet, and that's how he describes his own life. He's had to live with being diagnosed with bipolar depression before he's even had time to even come out of the second closet of being gay, so hence the double closet. So it wasn't that gay thing didn't define him. For him, the first half of his life was about having to deal with having the mental illness and the stigma associated with that before he went on to realize that, hey, he's gay too. And you
talked there about normalizing life for gay and lesbian people. Singapore is quite a conservative society. Would I be right in saying that?
Yes. Conservative.
How close to normalizing do you think you're getting?
It's not that impossible when you think about it. I like to think that however conservative we may be, personally, politically or socially, it's still possible to recognize that, hey, I've got a son, a daughter, an uncle, an aunt or a sibling who loves somebody of the same gender or who's transgender. It is possible to make it very personal, and that's, I suppose, what hopefully those stories I've collected would do for the readers. Being conservative as a society probably means that it's going to be harder to effect widespread political change, for example. I believe you may be speaking to other people about the ongoing constitutional challenge we have against our penal code, our anti-sodomy laws. I mean, that is going to take a lot longer. So that's how conservative we are at a political level, a wide social level. At individual level, it's possible. I mean, that's what I really believe in. So
you've also got a blog, the I Will Survive blog that you have, and you've got some guest bloggers, and you're talking about the fight against Article 377A. Just wondering how those guest bloggers, what their contribution is
making very personal, very real, because of the very fact that we've got Section 377A in Singapore, because it basically means it criminalizes male-to-male sexual behavior. I remember talking to people who've encountered same-sex partner abuse within their relationship, and it's hard for them to imagine what it's like to come out and make a police report, because there's a fear that they would have, instead of getting protection for the violence against, instead of getting protection from the violence from the same-sex partner, that there's a very fear that they might be charged in court for the same, for under 377A for the having the same-sex behavior. So that's somebody I met, and this was going on for 4 years for him until he finally got out of the relationship. And then the very real issue of if you are a young gay man who is infected with HIV by a partner or a casual partner, there's a very fear that, you know, how are you going to tell the authorities, the health authorities, that you got it through, you know, your male partner? So there's that fear that what I would call the double whammy. Yeah,
there is some significant inconsistencies in the laws in Singapore. Oral and anal sex is permissible if you're straight, or if you are lesbian.
It was only illegal about 5 years ago. Before that, apparently, according to the statute, it was illegal for anyone to have oral or anal sex, regardless of their gender.
Okay, so recently, the law precludes.
It was only repealed recently, yeah.
So that precludes
straight couples, but the inconsistency, yes, it still stands at the moment that it's still illegal for two men to have any kind of sex. The law doesn't say anything about two women, of course.
Yay!
And it's all thanks to the wonderful Victorian penal code, which we inherited from the British colonial administration from goodness knows 200 years ago.
Now, the proceeds from your book are going towards an organisation called Uga Chaga.
Yes,
can you
two organizations actually. Yeah, Uga Chaga, which is a counselling. Well, if I'm not wrong, I'm quite sure it is still Singapore's only LGBT counselling and support service, run by a very good friend, Brian Chung. He's a centre manager of Uga Chaga Counselling and Support. And the other part of the proceeds also go to is a Pelangi Pride Centre. Pelangi is a Malay word for rainbow, so it's basically a LGBT resource centre and library. So two incredible organisations that I fully support in Singapore, Uga Chaga Counselling and Support, Pelangi Pride Centre, that's my little plug there for them.
Now, where if somebody wants to have a look at your e-book about the stories of living in Singapore, where would they find that?
And the website will be iwillsurvivesg.wordpress.com. Or you can, I suppose, you could Google my name, Liao Yangfa, Liowyngfa, I will survive.
And we will put a link on our Facebook
tonight.
We'll
put a link on our webpage as well. Thank you very much.
That's very, very kind.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Guram. That's a happy Chinese New Year. Happy, healthy Year of the Snake. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Hola, mi nombre es Felix de Colombia. You are on World Wide Web on Joy 94.9.
Hi everyone, my name is Yang Fa from Singapore. You are listening to the Worldwide Wave on Joy 94.9. And lots of love to everyone at
Worldwide Wave on Joy 94.9. And we just heard a discussion with Yang Fa to tell us about his ebook, I Will Survive. We've also got heaps of Facebook messages, haven't we, Matt?
Yes, and one is actually from Yang Fa. Hey, Squirrel, Matt and Tom, I admit this is the first time listening to your show, although I've known about Joy 94.9 for years, and I'm loving it so far. Thanks again for doing an entire show on Singapore. Anytime you find yourselves in this part of the world, drop us a line and we'll sort you out with a big exclamation mark.
Nice.
I think that's slightly illegal, isn't it? Make sure you don't get arrested for having a picnic. And also one from Haviz. Hello, Haviz, in Singapore as well, inviting everybody to come over for Pride Festival in August. It's called Indignation, and we'll post a link to that one on our Facebook page as well, which you can find by searching Worldwide Wave or facebook.com/W3Joy.
And now another song from Shaliza Jalita. Well, just because she's fun. Shaliza Jalita, Worldwide Wave, Joy 94.9.
And we are in Singapore tonight.
Where things are not quite as fun, but it sounds like there's a bit of progress, but there's a bit of not progress. There's progress in that the youth don't even know that the law's in place.
That's progress.
But there's not progress in that the politically conservative people are pandering to even more conservative masses and setting social norms, which essentially promote heterosexual normism, but also the fact that it's just plain old anti-homosexual laws.
Holding on to those old laws from the West.
Those Victorian-era laws.
Like
I'm
that.
Genuinely surprised by tonight's show, I have to say.
Really? In a good way?
No. I think there's so much opportunity there. I didn't expect to see laws so far behind the rest of the Western world from a country that is... that seemingly is so modern.
I agree with you, Matt, although I have to admit that I was impressed with the eloquence and activism from our guests tonight. Like, I really felt that Jean and Roy and Yangfa were not fighting a losing battle necessarily, but really had a stand and were working hard on it. So that, to me, although surprised at how far behind Singapore seems relatively, I was also quite impressed with what is happening.
That's right. There's no pessimism there. There's optimism that there will be change and that certainly younger generations have different views to what is currently there in the laws. So a great deal of hope, which is great to hear.
Definite. Great deal of hope.
And... they win for the best name for a community group. It's in my head now. Ooga Chaka. Doesn't it remind you of that song? Ooga Chaka. It's great. Is it just me?
And you can find out about Ooga Chaka and more groups that we're posting all of that right now on our Facebook page, W3 Joy. And we've also going to have that up within the 24-hour period on our website, w3joy.org. Also, thank you to Robert at the front desk. He's held down the line once again.
Coming up next week, what have we got?
We're off to the Netherlands, which is very much one of the beacons of gay rights from around the world, one of the earliest countries to take up same-sex marriage. But are the waters all well? We'll be looking at the rise of the conservative right and its impact on gay and lesbian people in the Netherlands, and speaking to Elko.
Elko?
Elko.
A person? A group?
That is an individual.
Okay.
Yeah.
In the meantime, thank you for riding the World Wide Wave. We'd like to leave you with some music. And you know me, I'm always trying to squeeze in some club music.
Well, I thought it was going to be a Rihanna song somehow. But
no, close. Next week, maybe. We leave you with DJ Rap Satisfied. DJ Rap is a British DJ who is Singapore-born.
And stick around for Kiss My Arts. It's Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.